Hello, hello, everybody. Welcome back to Passions Podcast, the podcast where we talk about the soap opera passions. I'm your regular host, Latara, as always, here back again with our friend of the show, Cam.
Hey, everybody.
Welcome back, Cam. Thank you so much for coming back on the show.
Glad I could help, but I could be here.
Always excited.
It's good to be back.
Yeah, always excited to talk to you about passions. So, today we're talking about episodes 456 through 460. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
All right. So we're going to jump in. This week was really like, it was a weird week because it wasn't slow, but it also, there also wasn't a lot that happened. Yeah. Like I have 3.5 pages of notes that, I mean, and that's a conservative, like I barely took notes on most of it, and most of it's magic. I have two full pages of magic. So we're going to do Shuise first.
Yes.
Get into a little bit of Teresa and Ethan, and the rest of the show is going to be magic. So lucky you all. Mostly magic. Lucky us.
Yeah. It was mostly like magic was most of it. And then they kind of toward the end of the week tied the other storylines into magic.
Yeah.
But yeah, like I don't have a lot on troubled marriages. I have very little on fate. This was a magic week. So
this was a magic.
It was all about that storyline. Actually, that's where most of my notes are.
It was a magical week. So let's get started with actually Shuise, Sheridan and Louise, and a little bit of Teresa and Ethan. Mm-hmm. Everybody's at the Lopez Fitzgerald home. Teresa is pressing Luis and Sheridan so hard about getting married and so that she can have a double wedding. Like, girl, chill, relax. She's pressing so fucking hard. And Luis says to her, you know, we already talked about this. Sheridan and I agree that we want to go slow. You know, there's no, we love each other, but there's no reason to rush. But Sheridan actually seems to be on board with like Teresa's whole thing.
Yes,
like she's kind of like quiet, holding back, kind of smiling as Teresa's like talking about like, oh, I'll handle everything. You don't have to do anything. And at one point Teresa's like, and you can help if you want to, Sheridan. It's like, it's Sheridan's wedding too. Mm-hmm. Like it would be Sheridan's wedding too, not just yours, Teresa. It's like, you can help with the flowers or something if you want.
and I think she had been, and I can't remember if this was on the episode in 456 or 455 or 456, but it got started because, well, I kind of blame Pilar because she said, hey, you know, y'all can't just have a super fancy extravagant wedding. We're going to need to figure out a way to cut the cost. And Teresa's like, I know, a double wedding. Let's have Louise and Sheridan get married. And it's like, well, first we were on Whitney and Chad. So I guess she moved on from that. She was like, well, I guess that's not going to happen. And now it's Sheridan and Louise. And now they have to have the double wedding.
Yeah, well, it was funny because as Teresa's like pressing these two about all of this stuff, Louise kind of combats her and says, you know, we want to go slow. We don't have any reason to rush into anything. And he goes, right, Sheridan? And Sheridan goes, that's what you said. Yes.
No, she's not saying like you can tell that she...
Instead of agreeing with him, she's like, yeah, that's what you said. Like, I didn't agree to it. That's what you said. And I just smiled. And he asks her, you know, do you want to get married? And she says she would rather get married sooner than later.
Drop it all the hints, Louise.
And this whole conversation gets very, very awkward. And then it very awkwardly ends. Like that's like as far as it goes. And then Sheridan and Teresa go to the kitchen to like have a little chat. And Ethan has a chat with Luis in the living room. And Ethan asks Luis straight out. He's like, do you want to marry Sheridan? Do you love her? And, you know, you need to look deep down into your heart to see if she's the one for you. And Luis says, that's not the problem. He's like, I know for a fact that Sheridan's the only woman for me. Like, I definitely love her. There's no question about it. And Ethan's like, well, there's your answer. Then you should get married. And it's like, it's so much more complicated than that. I agree with Luis right now.
Yeah. You know, Luis is being sensible. He loves Sheridan, but he's not letting that just overtake everything. He's not like Teresa, where she's like, let's get married now. You know, they've been on one date. They're like, we're going to get married right now. Lois is like, hang on. You know, I know this is the woman I want.
Yeah.
I need to think for a few. I need to make sure.
And the thing is, to be completely honest, if we're thinking about the timeline here, first of all, Lois and Sheridan are, and I've said this before, they are the one couple on the show that are, in my opinion, the closest to being ready to get married, but I don't even think they're ready to get married, you know, but they are the closest to being ready to get engaged. And, but they've only been officially together for, I'm going to say maybe 6 months.
Yeah.
Like it's been a really short amount of time because I mean, we're in 2001. We started this show in July of 1999 and they hated each other for at least a full year, right? Like we did them hating each other for almost an entire year. And then they started to get together and then Sheridan had that whole issue with the fake Lois, the masked Lois. Yep. And so they broke up and then just
were messing with them and manipulating them. And she moved to Paris or ran off to Paris and then he had her and the bodyguards and the drug cartel.
They've done a lot. They've done a lot in a bunch of, and it's been, you know, about two years. A year and a half of that, they basically were at odds with each other. Yeah. So they're just now getting to a place where they're not fighting with each other all the time. Yeah. You know, I agree with Lois. Maybe it's, we need to take some time, not rush into anything. Like you're the person for me, but we need to still learn each other and we still, you know, and still grow in our relationship and in our love. But Ethan thinks, and he's just become like a little Teresa minion, basically. Yep. He's just like, well, you already love each other, so why wait? Which is exactly the kind of thing that Teresa would say, you know. Yeah. Which is exactly the kind of thing Teresa is saying to them. So meanwhile in the kitchen, Teresa's talking to Sheridan.
Yeah.
And they have a little talk, but it's really not that important. It's just Sheridan saying that she would also like to get married.
But she doesn't want to push Lois into anything and she doesn't want to seem, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know if she says desperate, but she doesn't want to be that reason that like, oh, we got married because I kind of pressured him into it. And she explains that to Teresa and Teresa, you know, being tunnel vision, just doesn't get it.
Well, then these people like switch places. So then without any like transition, no, nothing.
No, the next scene. I was confused because all of a sudden.
Yeah.
Teresa Ethan's in was talking with brother and yeah, Ethan's talking to, not his aunt anymore, but Ethan talking to Sheridan.
Yeah. Ethan's in the kitchen with Sheridan and Lois is in, I mean, and Teresa's in the living room with Teresa. And so we're just, I'm going to go with it. There's no transition though. We're going to go with it. And Lois gives this very impassioned speech to Teresa about how when he walks down the aisle, it's one thing to like marry somebody, but it's another thing to know that you can keep your vows to that person and that you can make sure you keep all the promises that you make at the end of the aisle. And that's why he wants to wait, because he wants to make for certain that he can deliver on every promise he wants to make to Sheridan when he marries her. And I mean, it was beautiful. I like, honestly, I loved it. I was like, yeah, that's honestly a really, like you said, sensible, smart, and romantic way to think about it, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And Teresa nods her head at him as if she understands as if she understands what it is that he's saying. Mm-hmm. And then as soon as Sheridan and Ethan come into the living room, immediately starts talking about this double wedding again as if it's on. And Lois again is like, man, this is not the time. Like, we need to talk about this. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, and he kind of tries to shut everything down. Again, we get no transitions.
No.
Lois and Sheridan are at the cottage.
Yeah, I remember that. So, yeah, they were talking about that. And I remember I wrote a question. Why is everybody acting like these two are just doomed if they don't get married right away? And then my next note is Lois and Sheridan arrived back at the cottage. So yeah. that was when, because I said at one point, then all four of them came together. They were talking about, you know, going the back and forth. And then next thing we know, like you said, at the cottage.
So, yeah, they're back at the cottage, Sheridan and Lois. And Sheridan picks up her magic eight ball and she asks it if Lois is going to propose to her. And it says signs look good. Then I think she asks if they'll have a double wedding, and it's like yes. And then Lois comes in and he sees her with a magic eight ball and he's like, what's that? And she shows it to him. She's like, it's just a funny little thing I picked up in college, blah blah. Like, he doesn't know what a magic eight ball is.
And also I wrote this note too, it's funny how she's like playing with these little fortune telling items and stuff, and I'm like, you had the love noodle tonight, you had the fortune cookie tonight, and you're still messing around
with these
items that are so far have not been going your way. I mean, this is working for her, but I was just like, after the love noodle and the fortune cookie, I would have left that eight ball alone. I'm like, yeah, she had enough for one night.
If I were her, I would be steering clear of all magic eight balls, Ouija boards. You remember those little fortune tellers we used to make in like elementary school with the paper? Steer clear, girl. Steer clear. But you know what? The magic eight ball was giving her good thing. But you know what? Also, in Sheridan's defense, the love noodle broke because Hecuba fucked it up, right? True. And she got that bad fortune because of Hecuba. Like, it was
Hecuba manipulating things.
Yeah, and it was completely manipulated.
I think at first Lois was like, oh, that's dumb, these things aren't real, blah blah. And he's like, well, if it's, he's like, you know, say it. And then he picks it up and he's like, I'll show you. And he's like, when is the car that I'm getting Ethan and Teresa for their wedding going to be ready? And he shakes it and says, it'll be ready tonight. And he's like, well, that's not possible because it'll be next week. And so Sheridan's like, oh, you're getting them a car for their, you know, wedding present, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, yeah. He's like, but it won't be ready till next week. So see, the eight ball is wrong. And he gets a phone call that it's ready tonight. He's like, well, hold on.
Yeah. And Sheridan like takes that really seriously. Mm-hmm. Like, she's like, oh my God, that's so weird. And he's like, it's not really that weird, it's just a coincidence, you know. Mm-hmm. But yeah, no, he's buying Ethan and Teresa a used car for their wedding, which is so sweet. I love this wedding gift.
I like the support around them and like the let's get them presents and all of that. I like that. I like that he's doing good, especially because he was not for this wedding.
Yeah. And the magic eight ball predicted that the car would be delivered tonight, and it's coming tonight. Well, you know who else is coming tonight? Lois and Sheridan, because they then immediately do a tango and then have sex. I mean,
that was the end of my notes. Later, they tango again, and then Lois make love, and then he starts. Later on, after that, I think he goes in the living room. I don't know what led him to go in the living room, and he's now wanting to talk himself into marrying Sheridan. Now you catch him practicing.
Yeah, let's talk this through real quick. Yep. Actually. Okay, so Sheridan and Lois, after the magic eight ball bullshit, Sheridan then tells him, after he tells her, I'm buying them a car, she's like, well, I'm getting them a honeymoon to Spain.
Forgot about that. She did say, I'm giving them their honeymoon. And Lois looks jealous the whole
time. No, I think he didn't look, I didn't think he looked jealous. I was actually surprised. Like, I thought this was going to go a different direction, and I'm glad it didn't go the direction I was dreading it was going to go, where he was going to start feeling like super insecure about not having any money and the fact that she has enough money. He was like really glad. I think if anything, he was jealous because he wants to go on a honeymoon. That's what I mean.
Yeah, he was like, well, I want to go to Spain. Like, the look on his face was like, he starts imagining the two of them in Spain. And
yeah, so that's when they tango, because that's what they do in Spain, tango.
Yep, I skipped a little bit, I'm sorry. I remember, because after that, and he was like, we have to practice our tango. We're going to show, he said, we're going to show Ethan and Teresa how to tango.
They said they're going to teach Ethan and Teresa how to tango so that for when they go to Spain, whatever. It was a ploy to have sex. And which they do. The term everybody in this show uses gratuitously, they make love.
For like a good episode and a half, two episodes of the week, they're
Yeah, they
the
have
chunk of the time.
They do a little love making. So after post coitus, what's this man's name? Luis. Post coitus, Luis has a dream that he and Sheridan are coming back from their honeymoon. Like, he doesn't have a dream about the honeymoon. He has a dream about coming back from the honeymoon.
Yes.
Which is so, I don't know why that was so weird and funny to me. It's like, who has a dream about returning home after a trip? Wouldn't you have the dream about like, and it's supposed to be this wonderful, beautiful dream. Wouldn't you have a dream about how great it would be? Because I don't know.
You don't want to dream about coming back. And it was weird. And then Ethan and Teresa were there. I guess we're still assuming Ethan lives because he's staying with Sheridan. So I'm guessing.
Yeah,
I'm
like, right now he's staying with Sheridan. And he wakes up and wonders if he will regret not asking Sheridan to marry him right away. He's like, am I just wasting time? And that's when he goes out to the living room while Sheridan's still kind of sleeping, and he's practicing proposing to her. And he just keeps saying, Sheridan, will you marry me? Like, there's no speech. Listen, if for anybody out there who wants to propose to me at any point, you got to come with a cute little speech. Okay. Yes. And I need something that's going to make me cry. And I guarantee you, Latara, will you marry me? Ain't going to do it. No. I need some stuff about how wonderful, how beautiful, how smart, how exceptional, how much you couldn't live without me. Please do me the greatest honor of my entire life. Like, if you want to propose to me, it's got to be that heavy. Like, I need the dramatics. Please do not come stand in my face and go, hey, Latara, will you marry me? Like, that's what Luis was doing standing there. And he was practicing it in different ways. But most of the time it was just, hey, Sheridan, will you marry me? Yeah. And then at one point he gets down on one knee. And while all this is happening, Sheridan wakes up and she kind of stands in the doorway behind him and sees this happening. And she is thrilled, over the moon.
Yes.
And smiling. And then he turns around, sees her there, and he's like, oh my goodness, how much of this did you see? And he's like, oh, I didn't see anything. I just noticed you came in here pacing. And you seem to have something on your mind. He's like, you didn't hear anything? And she's like, no, I didn't hear anything. What do you have anything you need to tell me? Anything playing you need dumb. To ask me? Mm-hmm. You know, and then he sits her down on the couch. And again, I need a better plan than this. He sits her down. Also, for me, it would have to be a couple of days after this, because all the pressure surrounding like everybody telling him you need to ask Sheridan to marry you, like, I don't know. I would feel like he just felt like he had to, like he was like obligated. But anyway, he sits Sheridan down on the couch, he grabs her hand, and he's telling her, I need to ask you something. What I'm about to ask you is going to change both of our lives forever. She's like, go on. He gets down on one knee and the phone rings.
Of course it does.
And Sheridan says, let it ring. And he's like, I can't. It could be about Charity's disappearance. Who cares?
I can't believe he even remembered that, given everything that has happened. It's so wild to me, because all this stuff has been happening, you know, with him and all the back and forth. And then now I'm over at their house, and now I'm back at Sheridan's house, and now we should make love. And the fact that he even remembered Charity. I mean, while like all this is going on and Luis is just over here in his own little world, and he's like, oh, well, this might be about Charity. I'm like, now you care about Charity. I mean, he cares because he cares about Miguel, but I'm just.
Nobody should care about Charity. Nobody should care anymore. We should seal up that hell hole and call it a day. I mean,
it's just been so long.
She's a lost cause at this point, in my opinion. We've been trying for what feels like months. It has been
this, because they have a lot of storylines that go on for a long period of time, and I don't know exactly how long this one is, but it is one I remember being one of the longest. It has to have been.
They could let Charity go, in my opinion. Let her go.
Been over months. Like, this stuff started when Amy sold her soul around, we're going to call it
the Laura Easter was preview. Still on the show. Laura was still on the show when we first met Hecuba. Like,
the mine shaft, which that was also a long storyline.
We've been at this for a while. Yeah. So yeah, let Charity be. Fuck it. Mm-hmm. Anyway, the phone rings. Yep. He's worried. He thinks it might be about Charity. She's like, mm-hmm. okay, answer the phone. And it is about Charity, kind of. Yep. It's Pilar in full-blown hysterics, yeah. going, you need to get to the Bennett house right now. And he's like, what is it? What's going on? She says, you won't believe it unless you see it. You need to mm-hmm. get here. And she's crying. She's really upset. So he's like, I got to go to the Bennett home. Sheridan's like, I'm coming with you. So they go to the Bennett home and we will catch up with them at the Bennett home later.
Yep.
But first, we'll talk about Ethan and Teresa a little bit. Not yeah. much here. Mostly just the fact that Teresa is pressuring Sheridan and Luis to have a double wedding with them. But after Sheridan and Luis go back to the cottage, Teresa asks Ethan to stay the night. She says, won't you, I think you should stay the night here with me. And he thinks that she's asking him to stay so they can get some sexy time in. Mm-hmm. And she is asking him to stay because she feels like if Sheridan and Luis have more alone time together tonight, then they will definitely get engaged. Mm-hmm. And so they have this little misunderstanding.
Yeah.
It was cute. Like, Ethan kept going, you sure you want to do this? Like,
yeah, because they weren't saying what it was. And she was like, I want it to happen so much.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And you can just see look on his face. Which I had watched the previous episode, but like, even if I was coming in, I'd be like, I know that I know there's a misunderstanding here because,
yeah.
Look on his face.
Yeah. So, he thought he was about to get lucky. And then she goes, you know that I wanted to wait till I got married because I made a promise to mama. Oh, good.
I hate, but like, we have to wait. And then they, not to skip ahead, they kind of go back and forth, but I made a promise to my mom. I made a promise to the church.
Yeah. Purity culture was big. I mean, I was very much like, very like, I'm waiting till marriage.
I had that chip on my shoulder for entirely too long of my life. And I was very like snooty about it and just,
yeah,
other people because I'm more pure. I hate it.
Yeah,
and knowing better now, you know, we grow up, we learn. Luckily, I've grown out of that and learned better, all of that. But
I got to the point, I got to the point where it was just like embarrassing to still be a virgin. I was just like, I'm too old for this. Mm-hmm. grow up, Latara. Grow the fuck up and get some sex. Have some sex. But anyway, no, she is like 18, 19.
Yeah,
I was definitely, that's definitely where my mind was at 18, 19. Like, same. I'm waiting, I'm saving absolutely. Myself for marriage. Like,
absolutely. Ugh,
how annoying. But anyway,
yeah,
save me from having babies too early, to be honest. That's the main thing, in my opinion. Like, for me, it's not even about, I mean, back then it kind of was about like the period and stuff, but a lot of it was about like having babies and like pop. I had friends who had kids in high school, you know, and like,
I did too.
I knew, to me, I was like, man, that's sucks for her. Like, yep. Really sucks for you, man.
I did not want that for myself. I was like, listen, this is, I had hormones just like anybody else, but I'm like, I'm not ready for no baby. I can't.
And I had learned that abstinence was the only 100% you know, way to not have a baby, to not get pregnant. So I wasn't doing it. But anyway, that's enough about me and my sexual journey. That's enough about that. Okay. So Teresa and Ethan have this misunderstanding. She says, you know, I wanted to wait. But then they start making out a bunch. And then Ethan's like, no, you should go to your room and I'll stay here because I don't want you to break your promise, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. She calls Whitney up on the phone, who's also, which we're not going to talk about Whitney and Chad tonight because, I mean, today they did not do anything.
I have two sentences of notes.
I have zero sentences of notes because I quickly realized that they were not part of the story this week.
They really weren't.
And basically they're horny for each other too, but they don't do anything. Teresa calls Whitney and basically to get Whitney to co-sign her wanting to have sex with Ethan tonight. But of course, Whitney's not going to co-sign that. Whitney's like, no, you made a promise. Mm-hmm. And Teresa says to her, yeah, but we're getting married anyway. Like, it seems a little silly to be waiting arbitrarily. We're getting married. And he has made a commitment to me, which is also legitimate and fair. I have no argument.
Yeah.
I have no argument. And so Teresa slips into her a white nightgown, like a white long floor length negligee, and goes to Ethan on the pullout in the living room. I mean, girl, you do not want to lose your virginity. Like, there's a lot of ways to lose your virginity. You do not want to lose your virginity on the pullout sofa in the living room of your childhood home.
She could have easily just said Ethan, or like called him. I don't know, called him on his cell phone and just said, hey, can you come back here? Or got him and they could have gone to her room where they
had privacy. That's what I said. Why not take him to your room? Why are y'all doing this in the open in Pilar's house? Like in the living room at Pilar's house. Mm-hmm. And so they're getting a little hot and she comes in and they start to like make out. He's like, you're so beautiful. They're saying a lot of love making words that I didn't write down because I felt real icky about it. It was just like, I don't know. I don't know why sentimentality in like sex makes me really feel really gross.
Yeah.
And maybe I should talk to a therapist about it. But like,
well, I think it was just also just the way they say everything. They're just like,
well, he's like, your skin is so soft.
Yeah. And it's just, and like the way she was like, tell me how it's gonna be, and he was just like, it's going to be a roar of sensation.
Yeah.
And it's our bodies will be closer than ever, and I'll hold you so tight. It was just these,
and at one point she literally says, never let go. I was just like, very uncomfortable.
I think that's why, because I'm like, this isn't how people talk.
I was just very uncomfortable.
I think that's why. Like it was.
But anyway, they're getting real hot and heavy. Yeah. And then Teresa sees a picture of Pilar because she's in the fucking living room at Pilar's house. So she sees a picture of her mother, and she's of course, as I would too, be like,
no,
you know, it's a real cock block. Like, I don't know. I was like, okay. My mom staring at me from across the room from the mantelpiece. And with her judgmental eyes, Pilar's judgy eyes on Teresa's backside. So Teresa kind of stops, and Ethan says, you know, we don't have to do this. But she's like, no, but I want to. So they go at it again.
They do.
And this time they stop because Teresa asks, do you have protection? And he doesn't. He's like, no, I didn't bring anything because I didn't think I needed it because we were waiting. And no, I don't have anything on me. And so that's why they stop. They stop because they don't have any condoms. At one point, Teresa says, I don't want you to feel like you're missing out on anything, because I know that you and Gwen had sex during your relationship. And he says to her, no, I knew what this was. Like, this isn't about sex for me. And we're going to have, basically, he says, we're going to have plenty of sex for the rest of our lives.
Yep.
You know, so I don't know. On the one hand, it was kind of sweet. Then he's like, and we can still make love without having sex, which immediately I was like, I knew it wasn't where my mind immediately went, but my mind immediately went to like oral sex. Cause that's what like the boys say, you know, like it's not real sex. It's not real sex, but it is a form of sex, but that is not what he did. He told her to close her eyes, and then he comes back, and he has lit every candle in this home. He's put out a bunch of candles and lit a bunch of candles. He's just like made the room more romantic, and then puts on a little bit of music, and then they kind of start to slow dance.
Yeah.
And
this is how we can make love without.
Yeah. This is us making love without having sex. It's like, we're making plenty of love. And she was like, okay. Because she's 18, 19. She's like, sure. This is sexless making love. But then they make out some more. And Teresa's like, I can't help myself, I think is what she says. Mm-hmm. And yeah. They start like getting hot and heavy. And actually, this is the time where he doesn't have the condom. And that's okay. That's the only reason they didn't have sex. They were definitely okay. going to have
sex. I thought
sex
that it happened time. Before this, but I guess this happened after. Because they, yeah, because I think that, yeah, she, that was when she was saying, I want to now. And yeah. So then he was saying, I don't have the condom. And then that kind of broke that up for a minute.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's
anything else after that.
That's it for me for Fate. You got anything?
I know in the last episode, like I said, they continue to kind of go back and forth, saving for marriage, not saving for marriage, blah, blah, blah. What ends up kind of really getting them out of it is I think they hear something and they both go to leave outside of the schoolhouse, yes. And they see some of the magic stuff happening. And that's kind of where they left it. Like, not necessarily like the house itself, but there's like a glow, which we'll get to when we get to magic.
Yeah.
So they're now starting to get pulled into the magic. So now we're starting to kind of pull everybody that wasn't in the Bennett home or wasn't around that storyline kind of into that. So that was kind of how that ended. Rosa wasn't a lot with them.
That's exactly right. That's where I'm at. They stop because of the light too. Yeah. All right. So I'm going to take a quick break and say thank you to our patrons. Thank you to Moon Ashay, Marcus, Erica, Brelin, Lisa, Zach, Sid, Randall, Ashley, Shannon, Hannah, Camelia, Amanda, Samantha, Eric, Jamie, Fantasia, Sean, S, and Belle. Thank you all so very, very much for being patrons. Especially you, Cam, for being a patron and a host. If you would like to become a patron, of course, you can go over to patreon.com/passionspodcast and sign up for whatever tier you find agreeable. You want anything, have anything to share, Cam?
Just, I love being a patron. I don't always have the time to jump in on the, but we have on the, because sometimes we'll have like martini happy hours and stuff. Those are a lot of fun. I think the watch parties. Mm-hmm. I have a lot of fun and I really like getting the bonus episodes because we get those right kind of before, like whenever you take a break. We'll usually get those kind of right before everything starts back. And it's been really fun. I've enjoyed it. I really am a big fan of the show. It's kind of like reliving a little bit of my childhood. So, I mean, I'm invested. Y'all should definitely join. There's a lot of fun stuff. There's Discord. There's merch. There's all kinds of good stuff on the Patreon. So definitely join. I love it. I am a Lobster Shack baby for life. So
Lobster Shack.
Yeah.
Lobster Shack baby. Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Good stuff, y'all.
Thank you, Cam. Thank you for the glowing endorsement. Yeah, I have a lot of time a lot of fun on the Patreon too. I'm trying to do more things. The end of October, which I think this episode will probably come out the week before that, but the end of October, the 31st, it's Halloween, and so I want to do kind of a Halloween watch party where we can kind of dress. You know, people can dress up. I'm trying to put together a tab with a costume.
Yeah, I love it.
I need to get a doll.
Yes.
But I'm trying to put together a tab with a costume. And like, I think I might go to work in my tab with a costume that day, just because I don't know if I want to put together two costumes. But yeah, we just had a watch party the other day. And we did a happy hour afterwards. And one of the patrons sent me a video of James Hyde, who plays Sam Bennett.
Yeah.
I think it was 1987. He was a backup dancer for Dead or Alive, the group that sings "You Spin Me Right Round, Baby, Right Round Like a Record."
I did
baby.
Not know that.
Yeah. And oh my God, honey. the man go, I mean, we saw everything but his penis and the dancing. Yes, 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 yes. So if you want a link to that, just like email me and I'll send it to you. Like, I'm not going to post it anywhere because I don't want James Hyde coming after me. I want to remain on like good terms, but like, if you want the link, just hit me up and I'll send you the YouTube link. But you could probably search it yourself, but yeah, we watched some of that and it was so fun and amazing. It's just always like little things like that we do. Like, so yeah, please join the Patreon if you would like to. All right. So moving on to magic, y'all. This whole week was mostly magic. It was mostly magic.
Nope, that's the wrong key. I barely had any notes for troubled marriages.
I have no notes for troubled marriages.
It was like, again, like three sentences.
We get a little bit of Sam and Grace, like, all of this supersedes that. All of this is so much more important than like their marital problems, because Charity, Kay, Miguel, everybody's in hell. So let's talk this through. Mm-hmm. Let's start with Tabitha and Timmy because it's a little fun. Tabitha and Timmy have followed Julian back to the mansion because, remember, they're trying to get the bottle from him that Hecuba is trapped in. Yep. So they lurk around the mansion, avoiding security. At one point, a security guard comes by with a dog, and Tabitha gives it a human bone. She's hiding, and to throw it off her scent, she gives it a human bone. So that happened. I have nothing else to add. I just wanted to share that with everybody. She pulled a fucking femur out of her purse.
I forgot that she had done that.
And handed and put it in a dog's mouth. Okay, so that happened.
Oh man.
Meanwhile, inside the mansion, Julian is getting home. He's getting to his home, into his bedroom. He gets there, turns on the lights, and lo and behold, it's naked Rebecca in his bed. She sees the bottle in his pants pocket and is like, oh my goodness, I can't believe you're so happy to see me, as if it's his erect penis. And he pulls out as if Julian's, you know what? No, we're not going to get into talking about Julian's dick. No. I'm not going to do it. I'm not going that low today.
I have a note on, because Rebecca, you know, right after she saw the bottle, and she goes, why put a bottle in your pocket when there's a tiger in your tank? And I'm just like, I don't know what that means.
What does that even mean, Rebecca?
Then I remember they go to, like, I guess they're trying to open the bottle. And at one point, I don't remember the context, but Hecuba's in the bottle and just telling Rebecca, whatever, you flashy floozy, is just taunting her from inside the bottle as they try to open it.
So Rebecca is in the bed. She asks what that is. It's the bottle. And then this was funny. She's like, what's inside the bottle? And he's like, I don't know, I couldn't get it open. And she says, well, let me give it a try. And she shakes it. She shakes the bottle and then says, well, shaking it didn't work. Maybe if I try to pull the cork. Bitch, what? Why would you shake the bottle first? Why would that be your first way of attempting to open a bottle, is to shake it instead of pulling the top off? Like, I cracked up at the fact that she was like, well, shaking it doesn't work. Maybe if I try and pull the cork. Why wouldn't you? Of course you would pull the cork first before you start shaking it. Whatever. And that's not important. It just made me laugh. The only reason they had her shaking the bottle is so that they could have Hecuba bouncing around inside and being mad and calling her a floozy. Then Rebecca and Julian do a little sexual role play. Shit was racist.
It was racist. I wrote that, like, he starts speaking in a racist accent.
He dresses up. First of all, let me just say, Julian has like this trunk of like costumes and shit, right? And he's like, the bottle has given me an idea of what I want to do. And he pulls out all of these different things, and everything he pulls out of the trunk is like straight up from Party City. Like, it's not good quality at all.
No.
We come back to them from like a break. They are decked out in like Broadway style, like costumes from the Broadway show Aladdin, okay? Yes. Like yes. Disney level, these costumes cost a bunch of money and yes. are well fitted. Not from Julie's Party City.
Got the turban and all of it. Rebecca's got the veil and the like gown or whatever.
She's doing, she has the little, she's doing I Dream of Genie. So she's got yes. her I Dream of Genie fit on. And yep. yeah, and he's doing Aladdin. And I'm not going to do the voice. He mm-hmm. does, he does a voice.
I just remember being like, that is awful.
And it's not even, it doesn't, it's kind of like, it's kind of like, a caricature of like an Indian accent. Like it was really bad.
It was like, awful. I was like, this is.
It was really bad, even for Julian, to be honest. So anyway, they do this sexual role play. Meanwhile, Tabitha has sent poor little Timmy up to get the bottle. So he's standing in the window watching this and confused because he doesn't yes. understand what sex is.
No.
And that was like, hilarious. He's like, why are their bodies all twisted together?
And he's like, and then I think toward the end, he figures out, he's like, that's why. And he falls, I think, backwards off the.
Yeah. He's so, he's so overcome that he falls off the ledge and falls on the Tabitha. And then Tabitha decides, oh, I'm just going to pretend to be a cat. So she just starts, meow.
Yeah.
Like a diseased cat. Like it wasn't.
It sounded awful. It was kind of, after a while, I was tired of listening to it. It was
loud. So she's going, meow, meow, like that. Yeah. And Julian gets out of bed and he's like, what's that sound? Get away, trespassers. And then just throws the bottle at her, even though he doesn't see her. I guess he assumes it's a cat. He throws the bottle to try to scare the cat away, I guess. But he also earlier was like so obsessed with this bottle, saying that it might be worth something, blah, blah, blah. But he throws it out the window, Tabitha catches it. I'm like, and to me, I was like, you know what? I'm so honestly, to be completely honest, even though this was a very simple fix and like, though weirdly convoluted, I was very tired of like this Tabitha Timmy chasing the bottle
yeah.
and Julian having it. I was very tired of it. So yeah. I'm glad that we did not continue with this any longer. So actually mm-hmm. I'm really grateful that they were very lazy in their writing in this instance and did not mm-hmm. do like a whole storyline around it, because I don't think I could handle it.
She just kept coming. We have to get the bottle back. Timmy's like, what if we don't get the bottle back? There's a lot of back and forth. And so finally he tosses the bottle out there. And I kept wondering, because I was like, if he thinks it's an intruder, then call Crane Security and hold on to the bottle. But whatever. I guess, like you said, we needed to get the bottle back to Tabitha.
And that's what we did. And I'm glad that we did it. So they take the bottle home. Hecuba tells Tabitha, she starts talking to Tabitha, kind of trying to sweet talk her. She's like, you got me, Tabitha. You bested me. You're really the best of the best. You should tell me thank you. She keeps telling her she should tell her thank you. And because it's the least she could do, you know, for a little old witch. I don't know. Honestly, I was very confused about all of this. Because then she seems to have put a spell on Tabitha. And Tabitha's like, Timmy's worried the entire time. He's like, we should get rid of her as soon as possible. What are you going to do with her? Tabitha says, we're going to bury her far outside of town. Mm-hmm. Timmy's like, well, let's do it. Let's go do that now, because she's dangerous and I don't want to mm-hmm. get anywhere near her. Mm-hmm. And I would rather us be done with this, basically.
Yeah.
So Tabitha says, oh no, she can't do anything to us as long as she's in there, but she can. She still has some power.
Can. Yeah.
And she puts Tabitha under a little bit of a spell, which causes Tabitha to want to free Hecuba, yeah. because Hecuba's saying to Tabitha, we could team up, but together with my power, you could rule this town. Let me let you use my power, basically yeah. telling Tabitha she'll give her power if she lets her out.
Yeah.
Tabitha only believes it because she's under a spell. So, yeah. you know, because I don't believe that Tabitha's an idiot. She's a smart lady.
Yeah, I don't think that she of sound mind without that would have, I don't think she would have given in to Hecuba.
Yeah, but she's going for it. She's going for it. And Timmy is like not going for it at all. And he grabs the bottle and tries to run away and get away. But Hecuba like shocks him, burns him, something with the bottle, and then turns him into a toad.
Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. She turns him into a toad. And
poor Timmy with all the animals. He was a dog earlier tonight.
But he's been so many animals, and they keep giving us the flashbacks of him being turned into animals, which is hilarious. But before she turned him into the toad, when Timmy took the bottle from Tabitha, he threw a picture of Martimmy's in her face. And that apparently broke the spell on her. Fine. So when she gets the bottle back, she throws it into hell. She takes it to the friends in the basement and says she's going to dispose of Hecuba that way. So she opens her basement door, throws Hecuba in the bottle inside. The spell on Timmy is broken, so he turns back into a little doll.
Mm-hmm.
And then the friends in the basement start like rumbling and grumbling, and Tabitha says that Hecuba is trying to convince them to let her out of the bottle, but Hecuba tells the friends in the basement, no, don't let her out, I can do this on my own, just give me my powers back, and I promise I won't disappoint you again, I can do everything on my own. The demons in the basement agree. They're like, okay, Tabitha, but don't mess up this time.
Yeah, no, they actually agreed and went along with it, which I had forgotten that happened.
Also, I never remembered how Hecuba, we got rid of Hecuba. Is this the end of Hecuba for real, for real?
I'm trying to remember. I think so.
Because to be honest, how anticlimactic.
Yeah, no, it is. It definitely
that's
is.
That's how she's ended. Huh?
I am pretty sure because, and again, this is skipping through some episodes, but I remember later on the hell stuff really begins to escalate beyond just Charity's closet, which we'll get to in a minute. And I think that it pulls in other members. Like I said, it's pulling in Teresa and Ethan. It's now pulling in Louisa Sheridan into the magic around the house. And, you know, all the stuff is going on with the Bennett home, which, like I said, everything is kind of expanding outside of just Charity's bedroom. And I think all of that drama and the way it builds up into other stuff, and I don't think we see Hecuba anymore. And again, I can't remember how the Hell in Charity's Closet storyline ends. I just know that it starts to escalate and we start to see less of Hecuba and more of everybody else trying to help.
Yeah, I feel like this might be the last we see of Hecuba, which is it was kind of a weird way for her to go.
Yeah, I
feel like she should have gone out with more of a bang, personally. Mm-hmm. I feel like she deserved. I feel like she deserved
she
defeated
she
like a boss.
Lot.
I feel like she, I feel like she deserves to have been defeated like a, you know, like the boss character that she was.
Yeah,
you know, and it would take more than just like putting her in a bottle and throwing her down the stairs, I feel like. But there it is. There it is. She's gone, I guess.
Yep.
She's out of my life. But anyway, the friends in the basement agree to let Tabitha like do things alone and to keep Hecuba with them in hell. And Tabitha starts getting her powers back.
She does.
She says, I could really go for a picture of my Martimmy's right now. And poof, they appear. Then she says, I could really go for some caviar on some water crackers. Poof, it appears. She then brings up one of those TVs, kind of like Hecuba had been using to watch all the people in Harmony. And she's watching the couples in Harmony. And then it fades and she's like, damn, my power is not all the way back, but in a couple of days I'll be back to like top notch, top spell casting. What's the word that I'm, whatever, I'm gonna cut that out.
I would love the ability to just zap myself some alcohol and a snack whenever I want.
I'd be so fat. Because
I cook at least 3 to 4 times a week, but I don't feel like cooking at least 2 out of those 3 to 4 times I do, because I have to. So I'd love to just zap something and poof.
If I could zap food and snacks and drinks to myself, I'm already very heavy. I would be on this, my 600-pound life. I would be so fat. Like I would.
I would too.
Oh my gosh.
I could do anything I wanted. So then I'm, I mean, the sky's the limit. She had caviar. I'd have lobster rolls.
Oh, hell yeah. Lobster rolls. Crab legs. Seafood all the time. I'd get mercury. Yeah. I would get mercury poisoning because I would be eating so much seafood for sure. Oh, yeah. For sure. And diabetes because I'd be eating so much cake.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll be tore up. I'd be messed up, y'all. That's too much power for one person. I love that we're talking about like having the specific magical power to zap food. Like I would love to have all kinds, like, you know what I mean? I want to be able to create anything.
Yes.
But food is really important.
It is.
I'm very excited about the prospect of being able to have cake at any time. So anyway, let's talk about what's going on over at the Bennett home. So at the Bennett home, Miguel is dead again. Miguel is dead, y'all. Like, he keeps dying. Mm-hmm. Miguel has died a bunch. He's a zombie. He's dead, but then he becomes undead. At first they don't have a pulse, then they have a pulse. He's back.
Well, because that was an episode two. So yeah, he had been attacked by that monster. So he passed out.
He had been grabbed and almost eaten by this. Last time I called it a giant worm with arms.
I call it a giant penis monster because that's what it looked like to me.
That's what it looked like. It looked like a diseased dick for sure. It's nasty looking.
It was gross.
And it has arms. Mm-hmm. And or I think last time I also said it kind of looks like Jabba the Hutt, but skinny, like a skinny Jabba the Hutt. But that thing was eating Miguel, and then Grace sent it back to hell and it dropped Miguel out. And so Miguel has been injured, y'all. This shit blew me. Miguel has been terribly, terribly injured. He was basically dead on the floor. The chief of police is in this room trying to resuscitate this kid and does not call an ambulance.
No.
Nobody calls 911. He got almost eaten by a monster. And then when somebody says we should call the hospital, we should take him to the hospital, Reese, of all people, is like, well, his wounds were inflicted by something not of this world. So they're unworldly wounds. There's nothing that modern medicine could do for him. Worldly medicine could do for him. Like, there's nothing that worldly medicine could do for maybe the fact that he has cracked ribs. Like, he was hobbling around as if he was physically hurt. It's not like he was like spiritually hurt. He was physically hurt. So take him to a doctor. And even if you don't think that maybe that's what you got, this is what we have. I don't know. I don't have a spiritual healer, but I do have Eve Russell, Doctor of the Year. Like,
I forgot about Doctor of the Year.
Please, please have her check him out. You know what? This would be the perfect time for Eve to sedate Miguel. He needed to be sedated, period.
Point we should have had Eve period. Over.
We should have had Eve.
He would immediately gave him a sedative.
Because this was ridiculous. So he comes to, he wants to go back to hell. Miguel, are you fucking serious right now? I can't. And so everybody is like, no, Miguel, you can't go back. He can't even get up. He's coughing, choking. He can't even move. What are you talking about? You're going to go back to hell to get you can't go back to hell to get charity. You're a broken man. Mm-hmm. Pilar shows up because she was worried about her son. Good. She just had a bad feeling that something was wrong with Miguel, which, again, I'm not going to talk too much shit about Pilar right now, but your son was trapped in hell. You earlier, she already knew Miguel was trapped in hell.
Yeah, she had come by earlier
and came back from hell. Mm-hmm. Pilar was there when Miguel was in hell the first time.
She was.
And got dropped out and was like covered in that ectoplasm or whatever. And that's the time he died before. Like, he was dead then. They had to bring him back to life, then they had to resuscitate him. And instead of insisting that her son go home with her, she just left. She went to work. She went to work.
And you see her just going about her normal life. And then, like I said, at one point, she's talking to Ethan and Teresa about their wedding. And I'm just like,
yeah, she's
meanwhile, your son is, there's no way I would have left my kid for a second.
She's planning this wedding with Ethan and Teresa. And then she's just like, you know what? Yeah, I have a really bad feeling about Miguel. Something doesn't feel right. No shit, Pilar. He was sucked into hell. And you saw it. Like, anyway, she comes over. She finds out that Miguel's been to hell again and beat up by some demons, but here he is, fine and alive. Mm-hmm. And anyway, he wants to go back. They bring him downstairs, lay him down on the couch instead of taking him to the hospital. I mean, this is really just unbelievable to me. It's crazy to me because Miguel says it too. Reese says it first, that there's like, oh, he was hurt by demons of the underworld. There's no earthly medicine that could help him. No doctor is going to help. And then Miguel says it too. And he says it in the nastiest way to his mom. I think she's like, we need to call Dr. Russell. And he's like, a doctor isn't going to help me right now. It's like, you seem to be broken. Like you're holding your side in your belly. Like you have broken ribs. You're hobbling around. Like you can barely walk. You're coughing up some kind of substance. Like at the very least, let's get you an X-ray, babe. Like at the very least, at the very least, let's get you some psychological help. Cause imagine the level of PTSD that you're going to be dealing with. Yeah. So anyway, they lay him down on the couch. They want to take him to the doctor, but he says there's nothing that an earthly doctor can do. Mm-hmm. Then he argues with Sam, who tells him he needs to rest. And he's like, but I can't rest. Like he's just so obsessed.
Yeah.
He's too obsessed.
Too obsessed. And that's all he can think of.
He's like, I got to go back to help Charity. I got to go back to get Charity. But he can barely move. So they literally, everyone leaves him in the living room by himself.
Kay kind of turns to go back and Simone's like, come on. Yeah. And I'm like, what did y'all think was going to happen?
And
I didn't know what to say with this boy.
The thing is, Miguel is clearly a flight risk, right? Yes. Like he's clearly a flight risk. Maybe somebody should be staying with him. Honestly, y'all shouldn't be in this house anymore. Nobody should be in this house.
Nobody should be in this house.
There's a portal to hell upstairs.
They should have left when the walls bled and the crows came in. I'm just saying.
Why is anybody here at this point? That blows me. The fact that anybody is at this house when there is an actual portal to hell upstairs. Anybody else besides who needs to be there, you know what I mean? Like, I get Miguel refusing to leave because he's obsessed with Charity. Simone, I don't get it. Nope. Reese, I don't get it. Like, y'all do not live here. Go.
Leave.
Get out while you can.
Father Lonigan was fine because that makes sense for the...
Father Lonigan wasn't even there at this point.
He was there for a little bit. He wasn't there this week. But He wasn't even there this week.
He was like, he got the hell out. He was like, yeah, y'all... It's not only so much we can do for this girl. She in hell. And he went on about his business. He said, I got rosaries to pray. I got confessions to do. I got some Eucharist. I don't have time for this right now, you know. So anyway, like I've been saying, seal up that hell hole. Call it a day. Let Charity go.
What else y'all gonna do?
But anyway, he of course starts trying to get back to Charity, hobbling up the stairs. Absolutely everybody's in the kitchen. Mm-hmm. But Kay comes out, sees him trying to get up the stairs and blocks his way. And then he's like, no, Kay, I gotta get to Charity. And he pushes his way past her. They get up to Charity's room and they're outside of the room. And this shit pissed me off. I cannot stand Miguel. I don't like him.
No.
I don't like him at all. So he is outside of Charity's room with Kay, who's trying to convince him, like, you cannot go to hell like this. This is ridiculous. Like, you can't even walk. And he says to her, I have to go find Charity because I love her. You would understand if you ever love someone as much as I love Charity. Mm-hmm. And Kay says, I do love someone that much. And this asshole, this motherfucker, he says, who, Reese? I mean, I know you guys have been hanging out, but I didn't realize you guys had gotten that close. Like, you know, y'all had a whole conversation. She confessed her feelings to you. Not once, but twice.
Like, we're forgetting the mind shaft. And then it does get brought up. But I'm like, y'all have had this talk.
This really irritated me. This made me very angry.
Love Reese that way. Like, they have had this conversation.
This made me very angry.
So gaslighting. Like, are you? Mm-hmm. we did the thing and I told you we talked to the mine shaft and you said that if you hadn't
Well, Kay says not Reese, and then he go and then he goes and says, oh, some other guy, why haven't you told your best friend about some guy you're in love with? Huh, Miguel? What? It's the dumbassery for me. He's so stupid. And I can't stand it. Like, I'm not like the smartest person in the whole world or anything. No. But this really irks me. He's just being so dumb and so thick-headed and such an, but also being an ass to her, mm-hmm. because you know, and it's so shitty of you to pretend like you don't know that she's in love with you. Mm-hmm. It's so shitty, especially in this moment. Yeah. So, she says no. And she starts to feel like trepidation because she's about to say it again. But of course she's like, I said this to him before and now I'm feeling like a little weird about saying it again. She says, well, I would die for my mom, my dad, Jessica, you know, there's people I would die for. He's like, well, I didn't mean family. I mean, somebody that walks into your life and you fall deeply in love with them and you can't live without them. And you would die for that person, that kind of love. And she says, well, if you go back to hell, I'll just go downstairs and tell everybody. Like, if you try to go back to hell, I'm just gonna go downstairs, tell your mom. Mm-hmm. And he says, if you care about me, and again, let me just say, because I have been saying this with the most subdued tone, he's yelling at Kay. He's been yelling at Kay this entire time.
He's being hostile. He's got like a mean look on his face. It's not the warmth that he usually speaks to her with. He's being
very nasty to her. He's yelling at her. And so this time he yells at her after she says she's going to tell on him. He says, if you care about me at all, you won't stop me. If you loved anyone like I love Charity, you would understand. And Kay gets really fed up and she says, I do love someone that much. Like, I wish you would stop saying that. I do love someone that much. It's you. I love you. And if you die, I'll die. Ooh, yikes. But you know what? These two are perfectly suited.
They really are.
They really are. Like, they love.
She is as obsessed with him as he is with Charity.
They love in the same really toxic way. Yeah. They love in the same very toxic way. And I think we should just get two toxic people off the market by putting them together, right? So that we don't hurt people who are the non-toxics, right? Let's put all the toxic people together and they can stay toxic together. Which I shouldn't call Kay toxic, but she kind of is. But I'm Team Kay. I am Team Kay, though.
Obvi. I am too. I'm absolutely Team Kay. She does a lot of things, but even throughout, if I think about everything over the entirety of the show, I'm still Team Kay.
Well, you know what? Her arc. She's had a really good, interesting arc. She's done some really awful things, but we've seen more of her humanity, of her character, who she is, what drives her. We've seen more about Kay than we have about Charity. And I think that's also why I like her more, is because I've gotten to know her. And I still don't really know anything about Charity, who she is, what drives her, what she believes
in. And
I feel the same way about
a whole lot of that, like without going into detail, like we don't really get a lot of that from Charity, but obviously Kay, you know, her arc kind of continues and we see more and more of her. We see her grow up and we see her go through certain things. And I'm like, it really makes you like kind of empathize with her and see things the way she sees things because they develop her character. They don't develop Charity.
They don't develop. Charity has no character development. And I will say Miguel also has no character development. His whole character is that he's obsessed with Charity.
And
I think that's also why I hate him so much. They haven't given him any character. He's just constantly obsessed with Charity. And there's nothing interesting about that, you know? Because he's obsessed with a character that we also don't care about. It's like, it'd be one thing if he was like obsessed with, or not being obsessed with Teresa because it's his sister, but a character like Teresa who is like, we're getting some character development. It's really interesting. Like, I understand why you're obsessed with her. I don't get why he's so obsessed with Charity. I don't get it. I guess because she's blonde. I don't get it.
I don't get it. They made it seem like they've presented this narrative that she is good and she is pure and she is, you know, sweet, and she is, because she's good and pure and sweet, like that is part of what draws her. And then you have Kay, who is evil and mean. And so I think the narrative is he is drawn to her goodness and her light, yeah, because he has been raised, you know, in the Catholic Church, etc. I don't know. I don't like the narrative there that like Charity's good and pure and wonderful and great and Kay bad, which, like I said, Kay has done some shit, but it just,
yeah, but Miguel doesn't know about her, the shit she's done.
No.
You know, she's taking very good care to make sure he never finds out about her yeah, misdeeds, you know. Mm-hmm. So anyway, continue.
There's something that happens next that I wrote had a little bit of a rant about.
All right, well, let's power through. So he says, so she says, it's you, Miguel. I love you. If you die, I would die. Mm-hmm. And then he says, I'm not talking about the love between two friends, Kay. I'm not talking about friend love. Like, I love you too, but I'm not talking about friends. And she's like, I'm not talking about friends either. Remember, I told you that I was in love with you. Remember, you told me. She brings up the mineshaft conversation that they had. She says, remember, you told me that if Charity didn't come to town, that you and I would be together. Like, did you not mean that? He's like, no, I did mean it. Mm-hmm. He says that to her. And he does tell her he loves her. Mm-hmm. I don't know, man. I don't know. I don't care for it. This is a situation where, similar to Teresa and Ethan, where I don't like Ethan very much, but mm-hmm, I like Teresa so much that I want her to get what she wants. Same. I'm feeling the same way about these two, where it's like, I don't like Miguel and I think Kay deserves so much better, but because she wants Miguel, I want her to get what she wants.
I was happy for Kay in this moment, but I was so annoyed and just fed up with Miguel.
Yeah, well, he says, in response to her, he says, you know, I'm sorry that I said that I would only risk my life for Charity. I want you to know that I would risk my life for you too, Kay. Mm-hmm. And then he goes, I'm just not very good at expressing my emotions. I disagree. Excuse you are constantly, too, constantly expressing your emotions about Charity. Like, please spare me. I'm not good at expressing my emotions. You're fine at it. You're constantly telling Charity how much you love her and how great she is and how perfect she is. Like, you're comfortable expressing your emotions when you want to. And listen, let me just say, I'm not faulting Miguel for being in love with Charity and not being in love with Kay. Or not being as in love with Kay as he is with Charity. Fine, whatever. But don't pee on me and tell me it's raining, because don't tell me you don't know how to express your emotions and your feelings, especially considering you and Kay are literally, your words, best friends. If you can't express yourself with your best friend, who can you express your feelings with? I'm just not buying it. He has expressed his feelings to Charity plenty of times.
He has.
Plenty of times. And to everybody else. Feelings about Charity to everybody else.
He's like, I love Charity. She's the best thing in my life. She's the greatest girl in the world.
And now he's falling to pieces. Those are emotions. You fall to pieces in front of everybody about Charity.
I have to save Charity. I love her. She's the only girl you can express your emotions, Miguel.
So then he asks her, how long have you felt this way? We already did this. We did this months ago.
I wrote, Miguel acts like any of this is new when we know it isn't, despite the fact that they acknowledged the mineshaft incident. Then he goes, well, how long have you felt this way? And I'm like, this is just bad writing.
Because we have
breaking
gone
out of
through,
these characters. This is just bad writing.
I want to be clear. I want to remind everybody when Kay lost her soul. So this is the Hecuba stuff. Kay lost her soul right before Christmas, right? Remember, she couldn't go to the Christmas. She couldn't go to the Christmas thing, right?
Yep.
We have now gone through all of winter.
We're about in
and spring. We're going into the spring.
Yep. We are in, I think it was even like the air date on these episodes was April. Late March, April, somewhere in there.
Yeah. So I just don't. We did this months ago, yes, Miguel.
We already did this.
So anyway, he asks her, how long have you felt this way? As if he's never heard this from her. And she said, she tearfully, I felt, I actually kind of teared up about this. Mm-hmm. She tearfully says, you know, it's been a really long time, you know, and that, but I've always, I can't tell you exactly when I started loving you. It's just been as long as I can remember. And he hugs her and says, I love you too. He tells her he loves her. He doesn't say, I love you, but you know that Charity is my girlfriend and I'm really, I mean, she's just so important. Like, it's somewhat misleading, in my opinion. He kisses her.
He does.
Full on the mouth.
No, I literally wrote that. I was like, they actually kiss. He cheats on Charity. And then I wrote, how the turntables, because I love that phrase. It's funny. It's like,
well, how the turntables. That's a good, that's a an office reference, if anybody's mm-hmm. wondering. But classic Michael Scott. But yeah, Kay actually, they talk about loving each other. Kay gives him a necklace to like protect him, as she says, it's like got the Saint Michael on it, which is what he was named after. Miguel is Michael, I guess, in Spanish.
Yeah.
And then he tells her, if I don't come back, tell my mom that I love her. And then he kisses her full on the mouth.
He absolutely does.
He kisses her on the mouth, not on the forehead, not on the cheek, not on the hand.
It was a long kiss. It was a kiss between people that are not just friends.
It was long enough. It was too long for a man who is trying not to confuse a woman who just told him she was madly in love with him. So anyway, like, that's just not the move. That's not the move. If a woman tells you, if anybody tells you, I am in love with you and I've been in love with you for a long time, but you don't intend on reciprocating those feelings towards them in any real way beyond like saying, I do love you, but like as a friend, don't kiss them. No. That's deeply misleading.
Absolutely misleading. Leading people on.
Yeah.
Not giving, yeah.
Do you have anything to add to this before I jump to Miguel going to hell?
Well, not really. I've said everything. Like, he's leading her on, and this was stupid and infuriating.
So Kay says, Kay and Miguel like say their goodbyes, and Miguel goes back into the Charity's room, opens up the closet, and hell's right there waiting for him, and he skips right back in. I mean, he jumps back into hell, and then randomly, Simone happens to, just the next scene, it's Simone and Kay in Charity's room. We have a Simone switch, y'all.
We do. I wrote that down.
Christy Ferris has shown up. Yes. We have a new Simone, which, bon voyage, OG Simone. We will miss thee greatly. I really wish they had given that actress more to do in her time on the show.
I
really, really do. But she's gone, and now we've got a new Simone, who I also like. But
I like Christy. I think she did a really good job. I think she kind of brings, going on without saying too much, like kind of that Simone is aging, getting a little older. She brings kind of the more mature Simone.
I agree.
And she's good. She's gorgeous. So absolutely love her. They picked so many. Everybody they picked is beautiful.
Everybody on this show is drop dead gorgeous.
Yeah. I was excited to see
the only person I would say wasn't gorgeous is Hank. I was not a big fan.
Yeah.
But everybody else is like truly beautiful. Mm-hmm. I mean, also like with the exception of like Julian.
Yeah.
And Father Lonigan. Yeah. I mean, if you're into that, whatever, no shade. But anyway, so Miguel jumps in back to hell. Kay and Simone end up in Charity's room together randomly. No transition, nothing. I assume Simone came to check on Kay. Kay brings Simone up to speed about everything that she and Miguel just talked about. She says, Miguel told me that he loved me, just not as much as Charity, and not as much as he loves Charity. So, I mean, if he comes back with Charity, oh well, but if he comes back alone, then I got a chance. This is basically what she's saying. But then there's like, Kay's like, I have to go and save Miguel. At first, it's like, we're going to wait here for Miguel. And then it becomes, Kay's like, no, I need to go to hell to save Miguel, which I don't know. Actually, yes, I do. She thinks that because she doesn't have a soul, it'll keep her safe in hell. That was like her whole thing. She was like, well, you know, I don't have a soul, so maybe that'll be an asset to me in hell. Well, the demons overhear her talking to Simone and they're like, yes, Kay, join us, Kay. Yeah. Come to us, Kay. We have such a special place for you. And they're beckoning to her to come to hell. And she hears Miguel screaming and she just rushes into the flames. Well, she hugs Simone first and tells her to pray for her. And then she hears Miguel screaming. She rushes into the flames just like Miguel rushed in after Charity. Because these two are peas in a fucking pod.
Mm-hmm.
Kay and Miguel are peas in a pod. Two peas in a pod. Mm-hmm. They're so much alike.
They are.
Which makes sense. That's why they're best friends, you know, that they're similar people. So she rushes in. Meanwhile, downstairs, Reese is in the kitchen with everybody and he says he's found a document because he's been on his palm pile. He's like, maybe there's something on the internet. He keeps saying there's something on the internet that I can find to help us. So he's found a document from the Vatican's website that says, in order for the evil to have come to a specific place. So he's saying he figured out where the evil came from and why it's there. And basically he says someone had to have invited the evil. And so they're all sitting around like, but who could have invited the evil? And Reese is like, well, Tabitha is a little suspicious to me. And everybody's like, nah, she's just a sweet old lady. So I just wanted to point that out, that happened and that Reese is getting more and more suspicious of Tabitha.
Yeah.
They're all downstairs and then they hear Simone screaming and upstairs and screaming for Kay. And so everybody rushes upstairs and they see that Kay's not there and that the gates of hell are opened up again.
They never should have left Miguel down there. Sorry, I'm still on. Y'all shouldn't have left him.
We should have just... He should have been at the hospital. That just blows me. I don't understand why he wasn't at the hospital anyway. But you know,
and they're just chilling. I wrote like one little sentence. They're just in the kitchen, like chilling and kind of recapping a little bit for the viewers. And I'm just like,
oh yeah, they do a lot of recap.
Miguel's out on the couch and half dead. Charity's in hell. We're just in the kitchen having tea and shit.
So they rush upstairs and they see Charity, Miguel, and Kay, and they're all being held captive by the giant worm demon, the giant like dick demon, and he's got Miguel and Charity in one hand, and he's holding Kay in like his tail, I think.
Yeah, I think like that said tentacles. I didn't know what he had. Yeah,
and he says, Charity, Miguel, and Kay will spend eternity in hell, which really irritated me because the line clearly should be Charity, Kay, and Miguel will spend eternity in hell, right? Like it should rhyme. Like it just really irritated me. But anyway, Charity, Miguel, and Kay will spend eternity in hell. So the closet doors slam shut, but they can still hear all the kids' voices inside screaming. And then we get to see the demon serpent silhouette. And it says, it's showing through the door. We can see it through the door. And it says, you can't help them now, Grace Bennett. You've interfered enough. It's like specifically targeting Grace because she was the one that helped in the first place. And now, not Charity. What's the daughter's name? Jessica.
Jessica's
asking her, pleading with her, mom, can't you do something? Like, what about your powers? Mm-hmm. And Grace just keeps going, I'm trying, but she's not doing anything. Mm-hmm. Like, girl, extend your arm or something. Like, at least try to, like, do some Power Ranger moves or something. I don't know. something, because she's just standing there like a limp noodle. She's not act, she's like, I'm trying.
They're not frantic enough for what they're seeing in front of them. And I get they've been through a lot, but listen,
I'll tell you, I would not be in this house. I'm sorry. I just, maybe if I was Grace or Sam, because that's my kid, and and Pilar, because that's
my kid. But if I were Reese, no. If I were Simone, absolutely not. Like, I'm not.
Even if I was Jessica, like, no.
No.
Y'all handle this. I'll be outside. But the doors slam. The demon tells Grace that she can't do anything. The demons also says that Charity and Miguel are going to the 10th level of hell, where they will spend eternity serving their evil masters. Mm-hmm. And then they hear Kay. What an arc Kay has been on, honestly.
She has.
They hear Kay pleading with the demons, saying to take her and leave Charity and Miguel alone. She's like, take me, leave them, take me. And she says it a bunch. And this actually is shocking to Simone, because Simone is the only person in this room who really knows Kay. But Reese is like, of course my baby love would be so selfless. Mm-hmm. Whatever. But Simone's like, wow, Kay really has changed. And I don't know, just interesting point.
It was definitely interesting, because it was not expected at all.
So they hear Kay pleading with the demons, and then the entire house just starts to shake. Everything's shaking. And then the closet explodes. So there's a big explosion in this room. Everybody's like knocked to the floor. The power's knocked out. There's debris everywhere. Everybody's like under something. And people are, you know, I think Sam comes to first and starts pulling Reese out. And then they pull out Grace, and Grace is like unconscious, and they pull out Pilar, and everybody gets pulled out. Everybody's fine though. Everybody's fine. So there's this explosion, and then the whole house just starts to shake some more, and the house just starts falling apart. Yep. So meanwhile, over at Tabitha's house, Tammy and Tabitha can hear the kids down in her basement. She can hear them coming through the sounds coming from her basement door. So now we know that Tabitha's basement isn't just inhabited by demons. It's a portal to hell, mm-hmm. which I previously thought she just had demons living down there, which makes no sense.
I had forgotten that it was actually a portal, and that these two things were connected. Like, she can see and hear what's happening with Charity's closet in her basement. I didn't know they were connected.
Yeah. And so they hear the kids down in the basement. Timmy's really upset. He's like, he's like in love with Charity for whatever reason, but you know, he's like, oh, those poor kids, can't we do anything to help them? Blah, blah, blah. Tabitha's like, nope, they're, it's done. It's a done deal. She can feel her powers coming back. She says a big thank you to the friends in the basement for keeping Charity and Miguel trapped down there. But then she says, can I please see them one last time? Let me see them one last time, just to see their agony. And then the friends in the basement are like, we will grant you your request. And we see Charity, Miguel, and Kay's faces being pushed through her basement door, as if the door had turned into like latex. Mm-hmm. And so it was like stretching, and it was just like the mold of their faces. But then then you could kind of see their faces through like thin latex. Mm-hmm. And they're screaming, help me, help me. And Tabitha laughs. She thinks it's hilarious. Yep. She loves this. Timmy wants to save the kids. And he asks Tabitha, isn't there anything we can do? Isn't there anything that can be done? Tabitha says, no, there's nothing that can be done, because there's only one thing that can help, and I have it. And there's no way they're going to get it. Mm-hmm. Tabitha, I mean, how many times have we seen Timmy kind of thwart an evil plan at this point? You know what I mean? Like, we know that he's not evil. And Tabitha knows he's not evil.
Yep.
Don't tell him. If you want to get away with this, don't tell him. But you know what? Part of me thinks subconsciously Tabitha is good too, right? Like, she.
Oh yeah.
She's telling him.
We've talked about that before, or I've heard you talk about it before. She's not. she has her moments, but she's really not evil.
Yeah. I mean, she's killed a bunch of people. Yeah. Like, that's the thing. The fact that she's murdered a bunch of people is canon in this show.
Oh, yeah.
And we've seen her kill some people at this point.
So. No, when it first started, it was definitely, especially the way she came for Grace's Faith, mm-hmm. for when she came for Faith and that whole thing. And
yeah, I mean, she murdered Faith.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, not to mention the tax man. She murdered the tax man. She has all of those shoes from all the other people she's murdered.
Mm-hmm.
I won't forget. I won't quickly forget. But she does tell Timmy, well, I have one item that could stop all this, but you know what? I'll tell you. There's nothing can stop this now. So why don't I show it to you? So she pulls out this glass box with a crystal ball in it. But the crystal ball is being held by a giant, decrepit claw. And she says, this is a demon's claw, not any demon's claw, the demon's claw. Mm-hmm. And if this demon's claw was thrown into the portal where Charity was originally pulled to hell, then she would gain the power to save herself and the others.
Don't know how that works. I don't know.
Whatever, those are the rules. Yeah. Them's the rules. So we'll see what happens in the coming weeks, because that's really where we end it with them. Tim Tim's little gears are spinning in his head, and Tabitha has given him the way to save Charity, and he's gonna figure it out, I think. Meanwhile, Luis and Sheridan show up to the scene of the house falling to pieces. Everything's a mess. Reese says, I'm gonna get back on the internet, which I wrote down just because I kind of thought it was funny, but also it was like, is this the time, Reese, break out your Palm Pilot? Like, it was the house is in shambles. Then so at that point, demons start to fly out out of that portal into like the rest of Harmony. There's a weird light, reddish light being shown down from like the moon. Mm-hmm. And like you said, Teresa and Ethan, mm-hmm. that's one of the things that stops them. They see this light, mm-hmm. and they're like, what is that? And they go to the window. So that's really the end of the week right there. That's everything that happened.
One of the things I had forgotten about is, and it wasn't really a big detail, but whenever they got in there, you know, Sheridan and Luis are seeing this for the first time. Because I can't recall, but I feel like the first time Luis came by to look for Charity, they couldn't find anything. So he ended up leaving. But this was because he'd come by and like kind of poked his head in before, and they told him about Charity. I think he had left. This time, you know, he's back, he's with Sheridan, and the demon in the closet actually said Luis Lopez Fitzgerald. And
it's naming names, and
and Sheridan's like, who said your name? And so that was kind of, I just thought that was interesting. But that was really it. That was for the end of the week.
Yeah. So that's it, y'all. We did it. We did it again. Thank you all for listening. So like, thank you for listening to this show. Thank you, Cam, again, for coming back on the show and hosting. I really appreciate it.
No problem.
All right. And remember, if you
talking about passions.
Me too. Remember, if you want to find me on social media, I'm on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, and Twitter. Just search Passions Podcast. You'll find us. And you can send us an email at passionspodcast@gmail.com. And also check out the website, passionspodcast.com, because y'all, I pay for this website. I don't know, does anybody use the website? Email me and tell me if you use the website or not, because I might get rid of it, honestly. I'm thinking about that. So all right, with that, you are my passion for life.